Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6 p.m. British Summer Time. Today is April 20th, and again, this has been a very exciting day in here today. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes, but as usual, I will give you a quick recap of the week, and starting with stock markets. Well, stock markets started the week relatively quietly. Then China had a bit of a hiccup yesterday, and I would not be inclined to call it anything other than a hiccup. And we saw some pretty heavy selling pressure on particularly the European stock markets and a couple of the Asians yesterday morning. They recouped much of their losses during the day, and the US closed rather well yesterday, having opened down on the futures and down a little bit when it opened. And today has really been an absolutely rip-roaring day, particularly in Europe, to a lesser extent in Asia, and the US is proving to be no slouch in here today either. So, stock markets looking pretty ebullient as we speak, and that has been from a pretty slow start at the beginning of the week. The bond markets, this was the week in which they found a little bit of support and rallied, but that rally is starting to look a bit dead cattish right now, and we would need to see something a bit more convincing from bond markets. This was also the week in which the dollar really started to weaken significantly. Against the pound, it weakened to over $2. The pound is currently at, pardon me for the noise outside the window. The pound is currently at $2.35 ticks. That's relatively unchanged on the day. Against the euro, it's at 136, 03, which is pretty much unchanged on the day, down 9 ticks. But we are coming really very close to those historic lows on the dollar index, and it really is going to be this. There's a big question mark here, something we often talk about at the chart seminar: will it or won't it? And I think we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks just how weak the dollar is going to get. One thing that I notice is that there is a major difference in sentiment now between now and the last time the dollar weakened, which was, I think, in November or October last year, from memory. Back then, there was an absolute cacophony of bearishness on the dollar, and right now, people are starting to, I think, coming around to the idea that the dollar is going to get weaker and how what kind of ramifications that's going to have, but there isn't the same degree of bearishness, and that looks to me like we could see the dollar moving a bit lower from here, but we will see. And looking at the commodity markets, this was in the week in which silver has continued to consolidate around $14. Gold, the same story, around $700. Platinum and palladium are making the legs in this one. Platinum's currently up $27, and palladium's up 8. So these are moving up to new highs, and they are reaffirming uptrends. Platinum, in particular, is really looking very impressive. This was also the week in which we saw some consolidation in the industrial metals. Copper continues to consolidate around this 360 level. Nickel is consolidating beneath this 50,000 level. Tin came off really rather sharply, up a little bit in here today, still within this sort of 1 to 2 month consolidation. Oil, currently up $1, but has been winging around between $60 and $65. Again, we're in a bit of a consolidation here too. So that's pretty much it for what's been happening this week in the major markets. Moving out to the longer term themes. What we're seeing in the US at the moment is quite impressive. And there has been quite a lot of nervousness in the market over the last couple of weeks, particularly following the reaction that we saw at the end of February. But since then, markets found support really quite quickly, and to a greater or lesser extent have rallied back towards those highs, and in a number of cases have moved on to significant further highs above those February levels. There are a number of markets which hardly consolidated at all and have gone on to make significant new highs. China would be a good example there. But one of the things that we're seeing here is that the US is looking quite perky. You have the Dow up in here today, nearly 100 points. The S&P is up 7.5, and the Nasdaq is up just over 12. So a relatively strong day in here. When you look at the charts of the S&P, you'll see that it has broken to a new high. It's attempting to break out of the short-term range right now, and we'll see whether it does that. And it would need to break this progression of rising lows that we have since the May 5th lows. And well, actually, in the S&P, it's a little bit later than that, mid-March lows, to offset potential for further upside. These are looking really quite consistent. On the other hand, we believe that Wall Street is in a secular bear market, and we define that as a generational-long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. Now, you might well ask, why do we possibly think that? How could we possibly think that Wall Street is in a secular bear market when all of these US indices are moving to new highs? Everything from the Russell, which is small caps, to the S&P, which is large caps, and a number of indices in between are moving to new highs. And people often give an example of a bear market as being Japan. That is a classic burst bubble where you had a significant high after a massive acceleration in the late 80s, early 90s, and then it was water torture bear market until about 2003. And Wall Street doesn't look like that at all. But of course, the difference is that this is a liquidity-fed bear market, whereas liquidity was starved, or Japan was starved of liquidity for a number of years as the central bank continued to squeeze well after they had already burst the bubble. So even though you have the US indices moving to new highs, this is still a secular bear market, and it is liquidity fueled. And you might well say, well, how is that liquidity manifesting itself? Well, we have low interest rates. That's certainly one way. Credit conditions, although a little bit tighter now, they're still really quite lax. And M3 is, and we, even though they don't produce the M3 figures anymore in the US, we can be pretty sure that the US is moving more or less in line with all the other central banks around the world. And M3, in the vast majority of countries around the world, is growing at something like 3 to 4 times the rate of GDP growth. So that is an incredible flood of money moving into the financial system, and that is helping to support stock markets. One of the things that we talk about quite often is the Wall Street leash effect, and we're seeing that right now. The Wall Street leash effect is that when Wall Street is steady to rising, as we see today, that gives or leaves the reins out to other markets. And those markets which have a good fundamental story, or those which are reliant on the US, will move on the upside. And we're seeing that in Europe right now. While the S&P is looking quite steady, the DAX was very strong today, testing the highs from 4 days ago. And the STOXX 50 was really quite ebullient. It's moved to a significant new high. It's gone through 4,400. It's looking a little bit overextended, and we can say that for a number of markets, particularly the leaders. It's impossible to say just how high these markets are going to go. What we can say is that these moves have been consistent, and as long as they remain consistent, long positions are justified. However, if they begin to accelerate, and if we see many more days of gains like we've seen today, particularly in Europe, they will become unsustainably overextended. And that means that we're probably going to be in for a more serious correction. But it's a little premature to talk about that right now, because they've just had one really quite good day on the upside. But what we can say is that they have certainly moved, and a number of key markets have moved to new highs. They're sustaining those gains, and they're moving upwards once more. We've been in a stock market rally for much of the last 3 to 4 years, and people are starting to get a little bit antsy. We saw a little bit of that yesterday because people panicked at the end of February. They saw a move in China again. They said, oh dear, and we had some selling pressure, but it wasn't to be. But there is nervousness out there in the market. People also think, well, where's the wall of worry? People are a little bit too confident. But really, the best thing to do is to keep an eye on those charts. And as long as they remain consistent, we can hold on to long positions. The only long position I had was Japan, and I sold it during the week because the Nikkei really hasn't been performing. And I'm relatively happy I sold it, and I am looking for opportunities to buy it back. But I am buying Japan because I think it has significant room on the upside. It's certainly not one of the leaders right now. But the important point here is that as long as the Wall Street is steady to rising, it's going to leave room open to other markets to move on the upside. We've spoken a lot recently about India. India has been, or is, in really quite a tightening environment. They've moved interest rates from 6% to 7.75% since October, which is really quite fast. However, the stock market is doing really rather well. It found support above 12,000 on the Sensex, and it's moving back up towards the highs that we saw towards the end of February. Now, India's our favorite market for the very our favorite emerging market for the very long term, and probably our favorite market for the long term. But it's not going to be the global leader. It's not going to regain that mantle of global leadership until the central bank starts to cut interest rates. What's supporting the market right now is the fundamentals of the Indian market, where earnings have continued to outpace analyst expectations. So even though it has a higher PE than the rest of Asia, those earnings coming out are helping to justify that PE. And that would need to fall below 12,000 to offset potential for lateral to higher ranging. And I think a test of around 15,000 is probably quite likely. So equity markets at the moment are really quite steady. And although some are becoming overextended and certainly risk premiums are rising, it is not the time to panic in here now. It is probably a time to start introducing some stops. However, now, one of the so what are the storm clouds that could be out there in the on the horizon for equity markets? Because we know that risks are rising as some of the leading markets become overextended, and we've had a number of weeks now of consecutive upward moves. The first thing, of course, is the oil price. Oil is currently up $1.11. It's back to nearly $63. It's been held up over the last week, which is rather healthy. The last thing we want to see is oil moving up very quickly, because that is going to be an increasing headwind for stock markets, and if it moves up quickly, it will frighten investors. However, this is a secular bull market for oil, so we can expect it to move upwards, and it is not a question of if, I think it's a question of when we're going to see it move to new highs. Again, oil will be an increasing headwind for stock markets. That's a very important story. The other major important story out there are long-dated government bond yields. Yields had been rising for the last 3 or 4 weeks. They've stopped rising over the last week, and you've had a little bit of a rally in bond prices. But this is a market that's certainly in trouble. We've been in a phenomenal bull market for much of the last 25 years. When you look at those yield charts, particularly over the long term, and I'm not talking about 10 or 20 years, you look at them over 50 years, so you get the whole peak and trough of the move. This is a developing base in bond yields. Now, I don't know what the catalyst is going to be to see long-dated government bond yields rising. But as yields rise and higher yields enter the public consciousness in the form of higher interest rates, that is going to be a significant headwind for stock markets. And at some point, there is a tipping where the yield on bonds looks significantly appetizing to liquidate equity positions. Again, I don't know when that's going to happen, but at some point we will see this happening. And that could be when we move into the next recession. We're certainly not predicting that for 2007, but we could see it in 2008, 2009, 2010, something like that. But the charts will always be our guide. The other major investment theme that we have is supply inelasticity meets rising demand. And this applies to a very large number of commodities. It applies to oil in particular, because once you've expended your oil, it's not replaceable. It's certainly not a recyclable commodity like metals. But commodity prices in general have been in a bear market for over 20 years. Some of them have moved to new nominal highs, others certainly haven't, but in inflation-adjusted terms, none of them, excuse me, none of them have moved to new highs. We have a large number of inflation-adjusted charts in the chart library, and while they are certainly not a timing tool, they are excellent for long-term perspective. So, the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. You have obviously got two sides. You have supply, and supply is constrained because there hasn't been the kind of investment during a long bear market that would have allowed the industry to boost supply meaningfully when demand started coming in from emerging Asia, which is our other major investment theme. Donald Cox has a wonderful maxim that the industries that will provide us with the best returns are where those who know it best love it the least. And that is certainly the case with some of the energy and resources companies. We saw Phelps Dodge, which was one of the bigger miners, hedging their entire production up until they got taken over, and that was hardly surprising. But copper remains in a secular bull market, and while it has had a very large consolidation and we had significant retracements since at the beginning of the year, it is starting to push back up, and this is without a doubt in a secular bull market. At least for me. But that means I have no doubts. Nickel is also remarkably strong. Now, nickel is quite overextended, and I think 50,000 was a bit of a bell ringer. But it hasn't showed any evidence yet that this is the high. This really looks more like a consolidation than a very, very important high, and it still has a very nice progression of rising lows. Although these levels look absolutely, they're eye-watering at these heights when you look at the charts, there is no evidence yet that this is an important high. Again, a secular bull market, the surprises will be on the upside. So we have industrial metals and we have energy, where the supply has been constrained over the long term. Soft commodities, particularly foodstuffs like grains, have also been in a secular bull or bear market. And when you look at those long-term charts, you can see that they're only just starting to break out of their bases. There are a lot more people in the world now, and the amount of acreage being put under various grains in the emerging world is being eaten into. There is certainly the potential for a secular bull market in grains and beans. There has never been a bull market where the demand side has been the catalyst. It has always been the supply side when you've had fungus or weather-induced moves. But right now, because of the energy bull market and because of biofuels and ethanol, you are getting a demand-driven move in the grain markets, and that is probably something that's going to play out over the next decade. And it is still really very early days here. Now, importantly, that's the supply inelasticity side of it. The demand side, India and China, they have 2.5 billion people, and in total in the emerging markets, there are about 5 billion people who aspire to the standard of living that we have in the West. And they're coming up fast. They're coming up much faster than anyone had ever anticipated. And they are moving into central heated and air-conditioned homes where they will have all of the appliances that we take for granted. And that requires a much higher consumption of metal and energy per capita. But of course, there are many more of them than there are of us. So all they need to do is, even though their consumption of resources is at a literal fraction of ours, that fraction only has to increase by a small amount, and the demand side for the resources sector comes under significant pressure. Now, there is the other element that is very much active and is very much related to the bond markets, and that was what I spoke about earlier, is liquidity. And because you've had liquidity flooding the markets, not just this year or last year, but for much of the last decade, you had long-term capital management, where interest rates were dropped and the market was flooded with liquidity, the Asian financial crisis, the Russian debt default, Y2K, 9/11. And all of these have been times when the financial markets have been flooded with liquidity. In a disinflationary environment, this did not lead to inflation. But ever since the Nasdaq crash in at the early part of this century, most central bankers have been afraid of deflation, and they have let the inflation genie out of the bottle by printing money and keeping interest rates low for far too long. This makes the value of money, it debases the value of money, and real assets are appreciating in value, particularly the precious metals. Precious metals have benefited from the supply and elasticity market because there isn't nearly enough supply for the demand out there. But they also benefit from the inflationary environment because people are have less faith in paper money and they want to hold hard assets. And gold has always been the traditional store of value. We also see that a lot of the liquidity is funneling into property prices around the world. And while you've had the US housing crisis, there are still large housing bubbles in many other countries around the world. And that is excess liquidity finding its way into hard assets. We also see that the art market has been having record years. So, as long as we have liquidity-fueled markets, and as long as investors are starting to see that the value of their money is becoming less and less, and you can see very good examples of this when you look at those charts in our chart library of gold and all those other currencies, it's starting to appreciate once more. And that shows us that gold is appreciating in most other currencies. It's been actually viewed by investors as a real currency. This means that there's going to be plenty of demand. Now, I think that also has major implications for currencies, because in the inflationary environment that we have moved into, and the fact that a lot of money has been printed and pumped into the system, and the fact that we have globalization, and it is in the interests of no country to have a strong currency, it means that you have a competitive devaluation of currencies, particularly among the reserve currencies like the dollar, the euro, the Swiss franc, the yen, and the pound, where none of them want to have a particularly strong currency. So they're printing more of their own money to hold back the rate at which it's ascending. Now, right now, we have the dollar weakening really rather significantly, and it does look like it's in trouble. But it's only a matter of time before other central banks start to think that this interest r or the rate of their currency relative to the dollar and others is becoming too strong, and try to intervene in the market. If we do see the dollar index moving to a significant new low and breaking below that 80 level on the dollar index, then it's probably going to take multilateral intervention to turn it around. And that is something that has only happened a couple of times. You can count them on your hand in history, but it has nearly always worked. Well, actually, it has always worked, but it has not worked immediately. So these are things to bear in mind for the long-term picture. And thank you very much for your time. I'll leave you this evening. I'm taking Mrs. Tracy out on the town this evening before we head up to or I think down to Hampshire tomorrow for David's daughter's wedding. And thank you very much for your time.